Welcome to Spirits Podcast, a boozy dive into mythology, legends, and folklore. Every week we pour a drink and learn about a new story from around the world. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Julia.
And this is episode 96, Ghost Stories with Paul Bay.
Wow, we are real close to that 100, aren't we?
We really are, but let's actually get back to that later in the intro.
Yes, we will. Sorry. I jumped ahead of the game. We're only 96.
We are also really excited to welcome our newest patrons, Skylar, Samantha R., Samantha G., Jen, Casey, Katie, Hillary, Joe, Brian, TH Ponders, and Robin. Robin, you and the 274 other folks supporting us on Patreon are bringing us to Spaghetti Warehouse.
I am so excited for Spaghetti Warehouse. I was just telling Jake on the ride home from the dinner I just came from, and he looked at me. He was like, because I was making all of our usual spaghetti puns, spaghost, spaghetti, and he looked at me, he goes, meat booze. And I'm upset with our, like, I'm upset with us that we didn't come up with that ourselves.
Yeah, that's how I felt about boo tie when the first one of us realized that. Yeah.
God damn it.
But actually, believe it or not, that's not the most exciting announcement that we have in this
set. That is
intro,
true.
So,
I mean, stay tuned. It's up there.
It is up there. I bet that our supporting producer level patrons, though, never miss a ghost Italian food pun. That would
true.
Be Philip, Julie, Christina, Eeyore, Josie, Amara, Ella, Neil, Jessica, Maria, Ryan, Phil Fresh, and Deborah, as well as our legend level patrons who always sit in the trolley car in Spaghetti Warehouse.
Of course.
Elisa, Zoe, Lorelei, Cassie, Sarah, Sandra, Audra, Mercedes, Jack, and Leanne.
Oh, man, you guys just, you know, all the haunted places in all of the haunted Italian chain restaurants. That's just, you're that cool.
Absolutely. And completely not haunted, our sponsors this week, Skillshare and Backblaze, will tell you all about it in the mid-roll. But if you want a little preview, you can head to Skillshare.com/spirits for your premium subscription at only 99 cents for 2 months, and Backblaze.com/spirits to get unlimited cloud backup for Macs and PCs. No scary ghosts in this computer.
And that's a 15-day free trial at backblaze.com/spirits. Amanda, did you read or listen to anything cool this week?
Oh, yes. Finally, after about a year and a half of being told by Spirits listeners that I would really enjoy the Rivers of London series by Ben Aronovich, I did. And it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's a great kind of magic. It's very physical, very elemental, all the stuff I love.
You do love that.
It's set in London, which is amazing. So check it out. Rivers of London.
So like we said before, Amanda, we're almost at episode 100.
It's true.
It's almost October, which is the coolest and creepiest time of the year. So I think we're going to do something special.
We sort of thought to ourselves, like, what would be cooler than New Spirits merch.
So our new merch line is coming out on October 17th. And trust us, you are going to love it. We have seen it. We promise. It is amazing.
And as a thank you to all of you whose support helped us get not just to the Spaghetti Warehouse goal, but to this milestone as well, we are giving all patrons who support Spirits at the $4 level or above a 20% off discount code for our entire merch store.
So no matter how long you've been with us, all patrons who are pledging $4 per episode or more as of October 17th are eligible for this discount.
But this offer is only available for the next 3 weeks. So after the merch launches, we won't be offering a discount of this size again. So this is your opportunity to pledge to us or to up your existing pledge, or if you're at that level already, to be like, yo, yeah, I'm the best. And that'll be coming your way on the 17th.
What exactly is this amazing merch that is dropping, you may ask? Well, all things in due time, but we will be dropping hints in every episode between now and October 17th.
I don't know. We just need a little mystery for October.
We always do.
It's an exciting time. Like, it's your birthday on the 8th. We have a live show on the 14th, new merch on the 17th, and then it finishes at Halloween. Like, what a month.
Oh, and Amanda quit her job this week. So this is her first day as a full-time podcaster, and this is 100% thanks to your support any of this is possible, that Amanda and I can do this full-time, just living our lives, living our spirits creepy cool lives.
It is super exciting. I'm wearing one of our Old Spirits t-shirts right now as we record. And I don't know what it's like not to have a day job and just do creative stuff at night and on the weekend. So I am so grateful and excited. And we're really happy to share this milestone with y'all by launching some merch that I think people are going to really love. So you can head on over to patreon.com/spiritspodcast to check out our first merch hint, which is up now, and to pledge your support for our future.
So thank you. We love you. And now it's time for the episode, Amanda.
All right. Enjoy Spirits Podcast, episode 96, Ghost Stories with Paul Bay.
All right, we are joined this week by a very special guest, someone who has induced plenty of nightmares in my life, which I appreciate very much so as someone who loves a good horror, dark suspense trope. Paul Bay, who is the co-creator and co-producer of The Black Tapes and also the producer and creator of The Big Loop. Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's our absolute Hello. Pleasure. So, Paul, I guess we can probably get started just like kind of airing out the fact that you have some of the funniest and also creepiest Twitter threads I've ever followed on the website. And it's wonderful.
Thanks. I think you reach a certain age and we've gone through enough careers that you're like, oh, these are actually funny stories with some hindsight. Scary at the time and a little fucked up. But with hindsight, it's hilarious.
Much like my college years, I understand.
It's at the point now where every time something crazy happens to me, I even though it's unpleasant, at the moment I'll actually be able to think, this is going to be really funny 10 years from now.
Maybe not in a month from now, but 10 years at least. So I guess I kind of want to get started with you create some really spooky stuff. I guess I kind of want to talk to you a little bit about like what the inspiration was, maybe to start with, for The Black Tapes and then some of your episodes of The Big Loop. So sure, if you want to get us started with that.
I think I've had this thing about ghost stories. Like, I've always liked telling stories, just any type of story, since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. When I got to university, we didn't have cable. We went to McGill in Montreal, and my roommates and I didn't have cable because we didn't have enough money. And so some evenings when we'd be drinking and we'd all be dateless, I'd just start telling ghost stories and just make it up as I go along. And if I could just read from their faces, if they're scared, I'd just keep going. And I'm like, oh, this is a good thread to go down. And then I'd choose one of them and just make it so that he won't be able to sleep in his room that night. Like, if I can do that, it's been a success. And if that doesn't work, I'll hide in his room later in the week and scare the shit out of him.
That is wonderful.
I was going to say, it's a very pure form of pranking, but especially if you follow it up with a physical prank, that's kind of like the best of both.
Yeah, my best friend, who's still my best friend, Handel, I told him the story about this weird French-Canadian goblin that are known to haunt these old apartments. And they're like sort of bald in the head and really small and just jump out at you. And he thought it was scary. I don't really remember the story part, but I remember thinking, I'm going to word it so that after one of his showers, he won't expect it if I'm in his closet hiding behind the clothes.
Oh, my God.
So he came out. I guess he had his towel on. And I was in his closet. And I must have been in there 20 minutes. And it was September, so it was really hot still. I remember sweating. And I remember thinking, is he ever going to come get his clothes? And then I was thinking, oh, God, what is he doing? What's taking him so long? So one of those thoughts, like, you know, we're all young men. Oh, thank God we didn't have computers in our room back then. And so, and then finally I hear his footsteps and he opens the thing and he starts looking through his clothes. I just waited for him to get to my section. And I had a bandana on. And so my head was bald if you just in a flash from the darkness. And I just sort of, even before I was able to say boo, I remember him sort of like yelping, like a weird, really weird scream. I've never heard a guy do this. Like, it was like a howl almost. And he went back, his eyes rolled back in his head. He did like a 360 against his desk, and then he fell backwards onto his bed and his towel fell off. So then I got scared. And so it was, that's how it all started.
That's wonderful. I really, really like that.
It's true dedication to creeping your friends out. It's very on brand.
The funny part is I did that once every 2 days after that because I realized how much fun it was. And our roommates would howl just hearing him scream. And he got better at not screaming. It sort of got conditioned towards it. And so I guess he wanted to get me back. And one day my roommate sort of rolls his eyes and he goes, hey, maybe he sent me on some stupid errand in my room. And I could tell he didn't want to do it. So I went to my room, and in my bay window, I could see the silhouette of my roommate Handel, just sort of like standing there with his arms above his head, waiting to scare me. He didn't realize the his silhouette would show through the curtains.
Oh my goodness.
So I grabbed one of my boots and I just chucked it at him. And then I hear this, ow. And I'm like, you suck as a ghost. And then I realized one day I'm going to write a story about a funny ghost or a really screwed up ghost.
I think throwing yes. boots at ghosts is probably the best method of getting rid of them.
Right?
It's like yeah. it's a proven exorcism quality. Exactly. That's awesome.
And then when I got to high school teaching, I realized, oh, I got this gift of telling stories sort of extemporaneously. Like it's great because I don't have to lesson plan then on a Halloween. So if I had my English kids in, it became a thing with every Halloween. It became this thing after over 12 years. It's called the Hour of Horror, where all these kids from other classes would pack my classroom. And every Halloween, no matter what, they'd all brace themselves. Okay, this is all bullshit. Mr. Bay's about to tell us an hour of bullshit. Don't fall for it. And then every year I'd still hook him. And convince him that there's fucked up things in this world. And so the first year
That's
was
amazing.
Ghosts, next year was demons, next year was like weird things in our school.
Oh, dang.
The last school I...
And you got to change it up because students talk to each other and they will pass on last year's final and they will also pass on last year's Halloween story.
Well, the funny thing is the last school I taught at Templeton that I told these ghost stories at, I told this story about one of the kids... Something happened on the third floor girls' bathroom. I've never been in that girls' bathroom, but I took a guess because it's a public school. I go, you guys ever been up there? Like, ladies, you know, like, do the lights flicker? And they're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah, right? So I just took a guess.
Yeah, it's a public school. We know.
Yeah, and I go, you know how there's never enough toilet paper? And they're like, oh, my God, yes. I'm like, yeah, okay. No. So I would just make up shit. And I'm like, you know how there's, like, a bunch of – there's a middle stall. And I don't know how many stalls there were, but apparently everyone knew what the middle stall was. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know that really creepy
there's
stall?
There's always a middle.
And they all – yeah. You know, they all sort of, like – there could have been two stalls, but there's something about a group dynamic where they look at each other and go, oh, yeah, we know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of fun. And then I guess I told them the story, but every year at the end of the hour, I would always say, and by the way, not a word of what I said was true. Then they all go, a lot of fun. Happy Halloween. Go off on your way. But one year for the grade 9 class, the bell went, and I forgot to do that last part.
No.
And it was a Friday. So on the Monday...
Uh-oh.
I got into school and my principal was so upset at me because she played at me all these voice messages from angry parents whose kids were really upset about all these stories.
No!
Like, I don't know if you remember, there's a Black Tapes episode about how to conjure demons. Mm-hmm. And there's this librarian who has a lot of fun saying the names of the demons. Mm-hmm. And it says, you don't even have to say it. Just think these names and they'll just come up. But isn't this a lot of fun? And that character is based on me and what I did to the classroom. Because I would do it. And these kids are putting their fingers in the ears going, la, 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 la.
You know. Wow. And high school, too.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Those influential freshmen, because grade 9 is freshman year for us in the U.S. And, oh, man, I'm just thinking about how freaked out I would have been as a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
That would have been bad.
That would have been in, like, the lore that's passed along to you when you go from middle school to high school. Right, where they're like, oh, yeah, no, this teacher's really bad. And, like, gym class, you know, the volleyball tournament is the worst. And, oh, yeah, no, Mr. Bay's Halloween, you gotta be there.
Yeah, it's fun. If you go to the Facebook Templeton group, the Templeton High School, there's an old thread that popped up that said, you know, is our school haunted? And then all these stories were the stories I had told, but I'd left teaching already. And then one of my one of my students, her name's Julia, she went on, she goes, LOL, I was in that class. Mr. Bay makes these up every year. And then I thought she was going to win the battle, but then other kids, like way younger, says, no, 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 this goes way beyond before Mr. Bay.
Wow.
Started in the 1950s, and they're taking my stories and recontextualizing them and mythologizing them.
We don't often hear about the origin of urban legends, but this is
quite literally
is
created
it.
Some. That's amazing.
Yeah, because I was too lazy to do a lesson plan for Halloween.
That's such a good reason to have an urban legend. It's so
like
good.
Every great thing in society that lasts stems from laziness. Like, you know, our technology. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't want to mail a thing. Let's create a digital email thing. You know, everything stems from laziness, including stories.
That checks out. I like it. We're too lazy to, like, convince our children to go to sleep, so we tell them stories so that they'll go to sleep anyway.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Wow. No.
Oh, yeah.
That was so good. Let me think. I have another question, I'm sure. Unless you have one, Amanda, then go for it.
No, I mean, I'm almost curious to hear some of the stories that you think are like the most perfectly constructed urban legends. Like, what creeps you out?
Remember the I don't know if you remember this TV show that was on ABC called That's Incredible, and it was early found footage stuff, and it was like it was almost like the Guinness. It was like part Guinness Book of World Records, mm-hmm. and they would show this guy could grow his beard to like 20 feet. And it'd show the video footage, right. And we'd be like, whoa. And this was, I think, late 70s. Mm-hmm. And so I remember watching these, but then they showed probably the first security camera footage I'd ever seen in my life. And there was a notorious, I want to say Missouri, but there's this Toys R Us store. Toys R Us, I'm pretty sure it's St. Louis. And it has a security camera, and apparently these children ghosts haunt the aisles of this Toys R Us. God. So they set it up really creepily, but then again, I was 10 years old or whatever. So it scared me. And it showed a tricycle going across the aisle. And it's all creepy black and white grainy footage. Dolls starting up. You remember those old monkey dolls with the playing the drums?
Mm-hmm.
A whole section of them started playing.
Oh my God.
And this is pre-Furby too. Furbies were the worst mm-hmm. for me in that regard.
Yeah,
throw them down the stairs. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff gets to me. Also, Koreans have a lot of urban legends that make it into the North American context. So one of my favorite stories ever involved, and it makes sense for Korean kids because it's like, if you say it the first time I said it in the Korean way, and my own students in Vancouver were like, what are you talking about? Why were they in high school on a weekend? Who studies on a weekend in a high school? The story goes where it's like, you know, this like two chemistry students, they need to study for their big entrance exams for university. They're all the teacher, their favorite teacher, lets them into the high school on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they're there and they're goofing around. And then all of a sudden at night, this girl that's a very pretty girl taps on the outside window and she says she needs help and she's sick. And,
nope.
Right. That kind of thing. And then she walks away into the fog. And then as they get back to studying and they're teasing the guy, you should have asked her for a number. They realize, oh my God, we're on the third floor. You know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Right?
Ooh.
Ooh, those are my favorite.
Yeah, but I hated it when I remember the first time I told it, I included it in my hour of horror for one of my classes. Mm-hmm. And it was grade 8. And they're like, why are they there on a Saturday? Where was the teacher? Like, that's so irresponsible.
You'll understand when you do it yourself.
Yeah.
You're fine. You'll get there. Oh man, yeah, that reminds me, there's a lot of like just really good Japanese urban legends that I'm obsessed with, and a lot of them are like focused around schools and haunted bathrooms and just like that sort of general kids being haunted by ghosts of other kids, and I love that so much. It's one of my favorites.
I've got one a Japanese urban legend, not sort of like a Japanese myth that I kind of made up based on something historically that happened in Japan. And I got this amazing Japanese actress that I just cast like an hour ago for The Big Loop.
There we go.
Ooh. Right? So it'll be the first episode of season 2. So just remember this conversation when you hear it. You're like, oh, that's the one Paul was talking about.
I will not ask for spoilers, but if you want to give us some, we won't be bad about it.
It's okay.
All right.
Yeah, as theater kids, the mystique of weekend at school was totally gone for me. Like I was almost relieved to be at school on a weekend because there would be other kids around, and it was like, oh, finally I can get here early and like get some work done.
Amanda constantly doing work when she doesn't need to since 2006.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yep, round about there.
Well, both of you are involved in so many podcasts.
Yeah, we do so many things.
I know. When I left work today, I said to my boss, all right, on to my other job. And he was like, didn't you just record? And I was like, I never stop
recording.
We're always
recording. It never ends. That's our urban legend. We're going to only become voices in the future. One day our physical bodies will just disappear, and then it'll just be our ghost voices.
Oh, that's
creepy now that I say it.
Yeah.
Or perhaps like, we have to keep talking in order to retain our physical forms. And so we just have to like keep coming up with stuff to talk about, or else our bodies will slowly dissipate.
Like sharks, but voices.
Have you ever had a dream where it's slowly revealed that you're the ghost in the dream?
No.
No, Paul, that's not a thing that we've had before, but please tell us.
Oh God, I remember one of the most I get a lot of very vivid dreams.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And they're very, well, I read them symbolically after the fact, but this one dream, it wasn't symbolic at all, just a fucked up dream. I remember watching like this family look, I guess it was an open house. Like I had the feeling I'm in an open house and I'm staring, I'm sitting here in this second floor looking, overlooking this massive foyer with a chandelier in front of me, looking down at these people, looking at this open house. I'm like, okay. And it's a dream. So I'm not questioning why I'm there because I don't know it's a dream. And these people start coming up and they're looking around. And I'm thinking, okay, well, they're getting closer to me. Why can't I move? And they get closer and they're inspecting the walls. And this one gentleman comes closer and closer. I'm like, I'm thinking he's very uncomfortably close to me and not even acknowledging my existence. And he starts looking around me. And as if he noticed something, I'm like, oh, what's he looking at? Is something behind me? And I couldn't move. And he gets right in front of me. And as he's looking around, he's sort of staring at my face, but he's getting uncomfortably close. And I'm like, why is he staring at me? So I move forward, but it felt like my face was going through a water barrier, like like through a barrier.
Wow.
And as soon as I popped through that barrier, his eyes went wide and he screamed and he just took off. And I'm like, and I was crying. I remember thinking, why did he do that? And after a while, when I woke up, I realized, oh my God, that was a ghost dream. I'm the ghost. I had my own sixth sense thing.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That is intense.
That is so cool.
That was one of the greatest
the
dreams I've ever had.
Sensory detail. Yeah. Wow.
Wow, like I'm just so blown away. I'm blown away by that. But Amanda,
I know, like I love, you know, we talk often about like liminal spaces, and how that kind of like border. I mean, that's where all urban legends live, right? Is like the border between the like seen and the unseen, and the real and the maybe not real. And I love particularly that like really physical aspect that your brain supplied of, you know, because ghosts must, you know, feel something or experience something when they move from the invisible to the visible. Oh, that's just so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember playing with that space with my eyeball, like trying to get as close to as possible while staying in that zone where it's just my eyeball. Do you know what I mean?
Like, you're such a good investigator, even as a ghost in a dream.
Yeah. I've wanted so badly to have that dream again or a sequel to it. And I haven't been able to do it.
Oh, yeah. It's always hard to, like, I can think of so many dreams where I was like, oh, okay, I really liked that dream. And then I wake up and I'm like, no, I can go back to sleep and kind of get in from where I started. And it never works out the way I want it to. I got to get better at you can, like, supposedly train yourself to do, what's it called, Amanda, when you can influence the dream?
Lucid dreaming.
Lucid dreaming. I can't do it, though. I've tried so many times. But I wish I could.
My friend George trained himself to do it. He's one of my roommates from McGill. And I asked him how he did it. He said in his real life, his waking life, he'll look at something and he'll look away from it. Then he'll look back at it. And he does that regularly. I don't know if he does it anymore, but back then he did. So that when he's dreaming, it's a habit. He'll look at something, look away, look back. And if it's gone, he automatically knows I'm now dreaming.
Oh, interesting. Ooh.
And he's probably the smartest guy I ever met, so he could do it. I tried it, but I think it lasted like 5 minutes where I'm like, okay, look away, look. Hey, look, what's on TV? Or what's on, you know, just a time to scare handle.
Yeah, well, that idea of a totem, right? Where like it's something that you know how it acts in the physical world, but in the dream world, the rules are different. Oh, man, I wish. I don't really remember my dreams at all, which is nice for just kind of turning off and going to you know, just resting. But it is pretty wild. Whenever I like think too hard about the brain, I'm like, okay, so if I can think about my brain, then what am I? Like, what is doing the thinking? The fact that like, we don't really know how dreams work and we spend a third of our lives in that space, like human beings are crazy. So outside of dreams, do you have any IRL paranormal urban legend experiences?
Yeah, I got tons.
Hit us with your favorite first.
My favorite one? Okay, so...
Or the weirdest. We'll take either.
Those are both good.
I remember I think it was grade 11 or grade 12, I came home and I did the usual. I walked through the front door. I said, hey, mom. And I heard, hey. And then I went and did my normal thing. And maybe about 20 minutes later or half an hour later, I yelled out to my mom, is there anything to eat? And no one answered. I went looking for her. She wasn't there. And the house was empty. So I'm like, I got the sneaking suspicion. So I called my mom at her work, not expecting her to be there because I thought she was in the house. Mm-hmm. And she answered. And this is on the other side of town. And I said, hey, mom, did you leave the house after I came home? She goes, no, I've been working all day. And I'm like, is grandma home? Is she visiting from Toronto? She goes, no, no one's there. So I grabbed my baseball bat. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking around the house. Everywhere. And then my brother came to the front door And he goes, "What the hell are you doing? I could see you from the sidewalk walking up, with, like looking around like a maniac with a baseball bat." I told him what happened. He goes, "Dude, that happened to me recently too." So he grabbed a golf club and we went looking everywhere in the house.
Oh my God.
And nothing. But this house was really weird. All my friends swear we lived in a haunted house because when we first purchased this house, do you use the term crawl space in the States?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
It's like not quite a basement.
Exactly, right? You got to crouch in. And it was a huge crawl space, took up half the house. And I remember when we were looking to purchase the house, when you walk in on the left-hand side in the middle of nowhere, like against the wall, was like a 5-foot by 5-foot room with its own roof inside the crawl space. And it had a door that could only open in, and it had like a little sauna bench. And it freaked us out because if you closed it, if you're in the inside and you closed it, like there's no lock, but there's no door handle on the inside. So there's no way to open it for you. Like you're trapped.
Yeah, that sounds like a murder room, Paul.
Right?
That sounds like a murder room.
It's really weird. So, yikes. You know, my dad didn't like it. So when we bought the house, my dad, my brother, and me tore it down. And we just tore it to pieces. And I remember that outline was always still there. And I would always joke, you know, if we dug a little deeper, I bet we find a teddy bear in the cement, right? I'd always joke and try to pick up my brother.
Uh-oh.
And anyways, one day we got our first Ouija board. And we played with it in the rec room right by the entrance to that crawl space. And it fucking worked. Like, I
know. Oh, no.
It worked because I was asking it historical questions. And my brother, I don't want to say he's not a good student, but he's like, he just doesn't know history, right? Like,
sure.
His other strengths.
Yeah, exactly. I would ask, where did you die? Poland, when? 1943. And then I looked at my brother and I'm like, when was World War II? And he goes, 1977. I'm like, okay, so it's...
Not right, but okay.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, it's not him messing around. It was so smooth. I remember our fingers barely touching it, and it almost moved on its own.
Wow.
So there was a lot of that kind of stuff.
My question is, why was a ghost in Poland here in your house?
My guess is it jumped aboard a ship and somehow made its way across to escape the war.
Maybe it was embodying some sort of like physical object that ended up in the house or something like that. Ooh,
exactly. That was my thought too. It kind of like can manifest.
Well, I didn't even think about that. So thank God you and I weren't friends at the time or else I would have burnt down that house.
It's that teddy bear that you never found.
Oh, it is.
Oh, no.
The crazy part is the house I live in now, thinking back to that episode, I wrote this little story that went semi-viral about a haunted high school. Mm-hmm. And the big conclusion involved a room that looked exactly like that. And on the inside of the door, there were fingernail marks. And they found dried fingernails in the cement and that kind of stuff, right?
Always good.
Yikes.
Right? That's pretty good.
No big deal.
So we bought the house. We're about to buy the house. And they had a crawl space. And it had and that exact door. Like from the story.
What? Canada,
in
why?
In the house you bought? Canada, what are you doing?
Know.
Canada, get it together.
No, my wife ended up making me get rid of that room and we renovated
it. Well, yeah, one would hope.
She sounds smart.
So that's probably my favorite one just because it involves my brother and me. I like stories that involve my brother and me doing these types of things.
Because he's easier to freak out than you.
Used to be. Now nothing scares him. And it's because of me. Like nothing.
You desensitized him.
I remember in grade, I think it was first year university, I was back for the summer and I went, the rec room downstairs was now his room. He was in senior high school. I came downstairs on a late Friday night or Saturday. I remember from the outside, the TV lights were on, but every other light was off. And he was watching The Exorcist by himself with all the lights off. And I'm like, I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, this movie used to scare me. It's really funny now. And so to this day, he hasn't seen a movie that scares him like from that time.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I will give him credit. That is pretty cool.
I think you're a good brother.
Yeah. I take all the credit for it, really.
As well you should.
As a true sibling would. Yeah.
All right. So what's the like experience that freaked you out the most? Just like given that you've had a bunch of paranormal experiences. What's the one that like to this day scared the crap out of you?
So after my divorce in like the late 90s, I was in a messed up place and I'm a guy who likes camping by himself. I've done that my whole adult life. I just go out for like 5 days at a time, find a very remote location. And back in my Christian days, I would sit out there and just feel God's presence, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was very into that kind of thing. When I divorced, I was an atheist. So I'm like, but the habit of going outside still was in me. So I drove from Vancouver, and my plan was just keep driving until I find a spot where I can be alone for like 5 days. Mm-hmm. And I ended up in the northern, the Redwood Forest, Smith River National Forest, or mm-hmm. Smith River State Forest, on the Northern California coastline. And the ranger told me, oh, you're in luck. It's pouring rain, of course. So you got the whole park to yourself. There's not a single human being in this whole park except you.
I don't know if that's
so you
luck.
Turned around,
Ranger Rick
went home.
So I was really happy about that. So I went in. I remember driving to the most remote location in that park. I set up camp, and at night I saw one of those swinging lanterns. You know those old fashioned lanterns?
Yeah. No.
It just
no.
swung along a path. So I'm like, well, fuck me. So I grabbed my hatchet. I grabbed the knife that I put in my waist pocket thing. And I grabbed my flashlight and I walked all the way towards where the lantern was because there's no way I'm going to sleep knowing that's out there. You know what I mean? Like, it was too late to drive away and I was drunk by this point.
Oh my God.
Because I've been drinking by myself. So I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Just wait in my tent? Because he knows where I am because I had a fire going. So I'm like, I have to go to him. So I went all the way to where I saw the light, which was like maybe a half kilometer. And I remember walking and trudging away, and it was super dark, it was super rainy. And I remember halfway thinking, hey, is this really my best option right now?
Like, no.
And I remember stopping. I remember the sound of the bushes nearby, and I'm like, oh, fuck me, come on. So I just started yelling, like, come on, you know, just trying to scare the guy. No, because if you think about it, like, to me, this guy was a psycho, but maybe to him, I was the psycho, right?
You were just in the forest by yourself. So, like, if I came across someone camping in the middle of the forest at night, I would assume that they were crazy. But that's
just
me.
Yeah, right? It's pouring rain. I got a huge hatchet in my hand, a knife in my belt on the other side.
Someone's going to murder someone.
Exactly. So it was nothing. I kept walking. I saw a camp, like an empty camp spot where the lantern was. Like, it was the last camp spot, but there was no tent.
Oh, no.
And there was no person. I'm like, oh, fuck, there's a ghost. That was my drunk thinking. So I went back to my tent. I slept with my hatchet. I didn't get good much move. Sleep that night because every little noise kept me, you know, stirred me awake.
Oh, I bet.
The next day, I'm fly fishing out on the river, and this guy from this other side where there's zero access, and he's in like army fatigues, he comes bursting through the bushes. And he's like,
no,
it was him. I'm like, he's like, dude. Is that you camping up there? I'm like,
oh my
where
God.
Are you from? He goes, I'm camping way up there. And he's pointing. I'm like, were you walking around with a lantern? He goes, yeah. Were you walking around with a flashlight? I'm like, yes. And we both started laughing our asses off. We'd scared the shit out of each other. And that burst of bushes I'd heard was him running away from me.
Oh my
goodness.
He saw
some psycho with a hatchet, maybe, screaming. I didn't know I was screaming. But he said I was like yelling, like, come on, fucker.
Oh my goodness.
So we scared. That's one of the funniest things that's ever happened to me. It was scary the night before, mm-hmm. but the next day was really, really funny.
Wow.
So in my head, I was like, do not follow that lantern. It is a will-o'-the-wisp. It is going to walk you off a cliff, and then you're going to die at the bottom of that cliff. So I would never follow the light.
And I thought that when you saw the army man again, that he would be the ghost and he would be like, oh, yeah, you know, how's like Korea going or Vietnam or something? And you'd be like,
Can I be really honest with you, too? Mm-hmm. I do not believe in ghosts at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's fair.
So that stuff doesn't scare me at all. Like probably the scariest thing where I thought, well, I could have. That was the closest call I ever had was that same week. It was daytime. It was after that incident. So mm-hmm. I was really happy. So I'm hungover and I'm walking down towards this new trail that I found towards the river. And there was a bear right there. I turned a corner. There was a bear.
Oh, dang.
Big black bear. And right away I thought, ah, fuck. So this is where I'm going to die. I didn't tell anyone where I was. I'm going to be one of those missing people that you hear about. Like, and then my mind started racing. Like, do I have my plates on? Will they be able to trace my body through my plates? You know, when you're thinking about you're going to die, all these weird things go in your head. And then I remember turning to my right and I grabbed a bunch of leaves and I started eating them. Like just gently eating the leaves. And then the bear ignored me and just continued on his way. Like, he's like, what the fuck? I don't eat Korean food. It's too spicy. So he just kept going. He just kept going. And I ran back to my car and I remember laughing because in my pure panic of maybe being torn apart by a bear, I'd accidentally accessed a memory of watching a National Geographic special on a mountain silverback gorillas. And the researcher said, if you want to survive an attack, eat leaves to show that you're not confrontational. So in my panic memory, I mixed up gorillas and bears. and ate all these leaves.
I mean, it still worked out for you.
It still seemed to work.
It worked. I think bears just generally avoid humans. So I think that's what was going on. But in my head, that's way scarier than any ghost to me. Like,
hilarious.
That still affects my behavior to this day.
Paul, I have a question for you that is asked out of love.
Okay.
Why do you think you are this way? Like, what did you love as a child? What did you read? What did you watch? Like, where do you think this comes from?
I think I'm a bit extreme in terms of like, or at least I used to be. When I thought something was the truth, I would pursue it to its logical extent. Mm-hmm. So at 18 years old, when I converted to Christianity, I went whole hog. I read the Bible like 5 times. I woke up I became a morning person. That was one thing that happened,
right?
Because I thought, mm-hmm. well, you should pray to my maker to start the day. And I became one of those guys. And then when I became an atheist, I was like, well, there's nothing. So might as well just experience everything. But the one thing that stuck with me was this one teacher, John Gibson, who taught me how to fly fish. Mm-hmm. Because he knew I liked camping by myself. He goes, well, if you're going to be out there, might as well do something instead of drinking by the fire all
That's
night.
That's
fair.
Fair.
It's creepy.
Fair.
I'm like, it's good. and he taught me that. So I don't know. It's just my way of, like a lot of people, you know, you get the sense that life is not that long at all. Like, it's really, really short. Mm-hmm. And so I try to squeeze as much out of each day. I know it sounds trite, but I really do try to squeeze as much out of each day. I'm one of those guys that if I have to do something that I really don't enjoy, it takes a lot out of me, more than the average person, I think. Like, I don't do well, like, doing stuff that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
And so is the sort of like thrill of the like bodily thrill and the adrenaline and stuff of telling scary stories, is that something that you really like about them?
I think I there is an entertainer part of me. So I think I like watching people being entertained.
Yeah.
Because when I was a stand-up comedian, instead of scary stories, I just told funny stories. And that I got as much a thrill out of that, right? Watching hundreds of people laughing at something I said was the same thrill as making like dozens of students freak out over a scary story that I thought of.
Sure.
Right. Like very Monsters, Inc. of you.
Yeah. the sucky thing about podcasts is that I make these stories with Terry, but I can't see the reaction.
Yeah.
Right.
Except on Twitter sometimes, but you know, it's not the same thing as the live feedback.
Yeah, I feel that.
That's why I like talking to guests and also reading listener urban legends, because it's sort of the opposite dynamic where, like, you know, I listen to my favorite hosts react to various things and I react to them laughing and whatever on the podcasts that I really like. But here, you know, audiences can hear us react to like their grandma's scary story.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty neat.
Yeah. The only feedback I get, cause my wife won't listen to the black tapes. Like she doesn't like scary stories at all. Uh-huh. She loves the Big Loop and she's glad it's not scary. But black tapes she refused to listen to. So the only real thrill I get in the writing of it is when I'm at the dining table with Terry and we'll sit there and I'll think of something scary and I'll watch his eyes. He'll be like, oh my God. And he'll tag it with something scary and then we'll high five over it.
Right? The best reaction to scary things.
And that's it. And then we have to sit down and write it. And that's okay. But it's not as fun as the thrill of the first part.
The immediate reaction.
Yeah. Because Black Tapes is a different writing animal than the Big Loop. Right? Mm-hmm. Black Tapes, I'm just purely trying to entertain with that one.
Absolutely. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to request a story from you just because it's one of my favorites that I've read. Would you mind telling us, if you want, just like a shorter version of the Christian cult story?
Oh my God, yes.
please, yeah, it's my favorite. And I don't know if Amanda's read it yet, but it's very, very good.
I have not read it, but Julia, I think if I'm going to hear this, I'm going to need a refill.
Absolutely.
Jules, we are welcoming a new sponsor to The Refill this week. Backblaze is unlimited cloud backup for Macs and PCs at just $5 a month. Now, I have been a customer of Backblaze for like more than 3 years. They are the reason that my anxiety does not manifest around data loss, because
nice.
Backblaze is automatically backing up my photos, my documents, my music, all of my audio sessions for Spirits every day in the background on the cloud. Again, just $5 a month. If for some reason my computer were ever to fail or get lost or get damaged, they can mail me a hard drive. I can download it from their cloud and my data is safe no matter what.
That sounds amazing and sounds like something I need immediately.
Well, I have some good news, which is that you can go to backblaze.com/spirits for a fully featured 15-day free trial. And it really is unlimited. You can back up a literal unlimited amount of data, which for podcasters like us, where we're making gigabytes of data on the regular, it is really, really useful.
Oh, that is amazing. Is there any like weird like cost structure or limits to it? No, there is not. It is unlimited data backed up at that fixed price. So all you have to do is go to backblaze.com/spirits, get that 15-day free trial, and try it out.
Absolutely. So thank you, Backblaze. We're excited to welcome you to the show. And thank you for keeping my data safe.
Do you know what's just as cool as keeping data safe, Amanda?
I don't know. Is it like learning and stuff?
Yeah, it is learning and stuff. And that's why we love Skillshare.
We really do.
If you enjoy learning about design, business, technology, lifestyle stuff like crafts and culinary stuff, Skillshare is the online learning community for you. It has over 20,000 classes. With the premium membership, you get unlimited access to these high-quality classes on must-known topics. You can improve your skills, you can unlock new opportunities, and you can do what you love. So this week, Amanda, I am recommending the class Getting Started with Wine, Buying Smarter and Tasting More, which like...
Why you gotta call me out like that, Julia? I know nothing about wine.
So if, listener, you are like Amanda and you go to a wine store and you have no clue what you're looking for, I feel like I'm putting you on blast a little bit here.
Yeah, I sort of walk in and I'm like, I don't know, are there any like gay labels? I guess I'll get that one.
Well, anyway, unless you really do want to pick your wine by gay label, which no judgment there, take this class. It breaks down the basics of wine. It helps you identify what to look for when you're tasting, selecting, and shopping for wine. So basically, you can be like, oh, well, you know, if I'm tasting a wine and I taste grassy notes, maybe I should go for more Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand. That makes sense. And this class teaches you all about that.
That sounds awesome. I think I'm going to have to enroll. And if y'all want to take this class with me, you can go to Skillshare.com/spirits to get 2 months of unlimited access to their more than 20,000 classes for just 99 cents.
Do you know what definitely costs more than 99 cents, Amanda?
Any bottle of wine.
Correct.
Yeah, I got it.
But imagine the knowledge you're going to have about wine if you just go to Skillshare.com/spirits and you spend that 99 cents. And now you get 2 months of unlimited classes about how to pick out wine. It's insane.
It's awesome. So thank you, Skillshare. Thank you again to Backblaze.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
And now, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, the cult story. In 1992, I was a youth pastor for the United Church of Canada in Vancouver for a Korean congregation. And we had a separate congregation, so I was in charge of all the teenagers and college students. Mm-hmm. And the my parents' generation were upstairs. They had an education department, and the education person, she said, you know, we want to train you to be a better youth pastor, a leader. We want to send you to this retreat in California where they'll train your leadership skills. I'm like, yeah, you guys are going to pay for it. That's cool. I'll do it. So I go down, and right away it was weird because one of my friends, John, from another church in Vancouver was there, and then two other Vancouver people. And then they made us change vans about four times on the way to wherever we were going. So that's already a red flag, right?
Never go to a second location. Never get into a second van.
Yeah. And it was really odd. And the guy was, his personality was a bit off. You know, when you meet someone, you can't put your finger on it, but they're just a bit off, right? Mm-hmm. And they're looking at you a bit too much in the face. I don't like direct eye contact with strangers. It throws me off. We get there. I remember there's like this, a double line. Like a human corridor of people with these Hawaiian leis and these guitars, and they're singing the song called De Colores in Spanish. So they're all Korean. These Korean Christians singing a Spanish song holding Hawaiian leis. So very multicultural, but at the same time, very freaky. And I go down off the bus, and they lay it on me over my head, and they're like, we love you, we love you. And I hear that for like a minute, and we get into the big auditorium, and it's very weird. I get into my room, unpack. There's love notes everywhere. Like, we love you, Paul. God has sent you here. And I'm like, okay, this is a little fucked up, but whatever. I get into the thing, and the message is a bit off. And I was always wary of cultish behavior, mm-hmm. Because I grew up in the 70s, so I in the 80s, so there was a lot of cults on the news.
Yeah, I was gonna you were in the golden age of cults.
Yeah, exactly. So that was in my head. I was a VP of a fraternity, Delta Kap Epsilon, and we ran purposely mind altering initiations to make them weak, to depend on you, and actually do the initiation. Like, I left the frat later on, but I remember running those things and knowing purposely, you know, they cover the windows, take away their watches, disorient their sense of time, make them dependent on you, and they will do anything you want. And that, most frats, I don't know if they do it anymore, but that's what frats did. It's pretty despicable. So when I saw it happening to me, like all the windows covered, they make me take off my watch, I was like, well, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
Ooh, the watch is really bad. Yeah.
And the other three Canadians and me slowly started to complain, like, hey, how can you guys, for you know, tell us not to bring our Bibles? Why do you tell us to not take our watches? And we became sort of an issue for them. I guess they're not used to people complaining. And then I remember the first night, got back to my room, and someone had been through all my stuff. All my clothes were folded out of my bag into the drawers.
Oh, yikes.
I had a love note on my pillow. It was saying, hey, Paul, my underwear was folded. Like, they folded my underwear into a drawer. My toothbrush was out onto the toothbrush holder. They'd been through everything. It was obvious. And it was so weird. And that was one of the creepiest things I ever experienced. So I was really angry. And so the next day going into it, I let my displeasure be known with the higher-ups. And I guess every single thing I did after that, they would follow me. And it was always these big, muscular Korean guys that would just follow me. Like, I got to go to the bathroom. Okay. Then a big, muscular Korean guy would escort me to the bathroom and watch me from the back as I'm at the urinal. You know, that kind of thing?
Oof.
Really creepy. And then they said, okay. And then they really, really sort of, like, indoctrinated people into, like, the reality of angels and demons fighting over our heads, right? Like, they meant literally. Mm-hmm. Angels and demons were fighting a war over our heads outside of this auditorium. And the only reason they can't get in the auditorium is because of power of our prayer. And everyone's, like, really into this, like, nodding and praying and, you know, whispering in Korean. I'm like, I'm looking at the other three and they're looking at me like, we're all like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. And then they said, we're gonna go to the other prayer auditorium. I'm like, okay, here we go.
No.
That's now a third location, which is not good.
Oh, this one was really creepy because it was nighttime. And when we left, there was, again, the corridor, the double row of humans, like Koreans, with flashlights sort of over our heads. So if you imagine like a lit archway, you know, they're holding the flashlights with two hands over their heads and they're bowed in prayer. And he said, the pastor Kim, David Kim, I'll never forget his name. He ended up being a cult leader later on. He's like,
like he wasn't one now.
No, that was the beginning. That was
his warm up cult, Julian.
Yeah, that was college cult. That, he hasn't been called up to the pros yet. So he's going to create a corridor of prayer for us and protect us as angels and demons fought. And he even said something stupid like, "Don't look up while you're walking, because if you look up, you might see a demon trying to reach." You know, really stupid shit. And I'm thinking, like, this is amateur ghost time, ghost story time. Because even like it's not even as a ghost story, it's not fun. Mm-hmm. Or scary. So we're going through and all these people are like praying and whispering and speaking in tongues as we're walking through them. And we get to this auditorium and every three or four seats had a box of tissue. And I'm like, ah, fuck me. Here we go. And my friends are like, what do you think is going to happen? I'm like, well, I've seen this kind of thing. They're going to start bringing up people and they're going to tell real stories about their family's experience with cancer and suicide and like, you know, all these, think of the saddest things that have happened. They're going to tell these stories and it's all going to end with Jesus save me. Mm-hmm. And we're going to cry and then he's going to distort the message and make us do something, right? And so...
Right, after the physical disorientation to make the, like, your experience of the stories that much more, like, I don't know, enrapturing.
Exactly. Yeah. They're going to whittle you down as they have been, and then they're finally going to make you emotionally dependent and feel this great outpouring of love for each other. And make us all into like this brother sisterhood thing. So, and that's exactly what happened. And then by the end, everyone's weeping except us four Canadians. And the guy at the front, the David Kim, comes out with this backlit thing. So you couldn't even see him. He just had his hands outstretched like Jesus and saying, just praying, but he never said in Jesus' name. He said, pray, come to me. And it was really weird. And yeah, so that's the night we said, we got to get the fuck out of here. So we went back to our dorms. and we'd forgotten that they changed the combo to get into the building every day.
Oh no.
And the quiet one among us, I can say her name, Ji Young. She was the quiet one among us. She slowly makes her way through the three guys and goes, do, 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 do. She had been watching the code quietly.
Oh my God.
So she,
the mainframe.
She didn't have much contribution during the whole time except her quiet dignity. Like the three guys were always panicking, like, and getting angry. And she would calm us down, like, hey guys, just let's just watch for a bit. Right? And finally at the end, when we really needed someone with skill, she's like, do. It was awesome.
That's your like climax in the movie version of this.
Oh, it was too good. So we got in, we met at the back of the building, and we started running for the fence. We got to the fence, helped each other up, and we didn't know where we were, so we're just in the field. So we just ran across a field. And it was like forever. Probably 10 minutes, 20 minutes max. Ended up at a gas station in the middle of nowhere. And it's one of those gas stations where it's like, you know, it's like it looked like Iowa, what you imagine Iowa to be, with a lit gas station on one side of a lot and a telephone booth in the far corner. Right. And so we went to the phone booth. I called my cousin. She goes, where are you? I'm like, I don't know. So we had to send my friend Dennis all the way to the station to ask, where are we? He comes hopping it back, tells us. And my cousin's like, what the fuck? What are you doing out there? So it took her 2 hours to drive out to wherever we were. I think.
Good cousin.
Yeah, she was great. Right. So she picked us up, and that was it. And then I met my other cousin who put us up, who was the first woman in California to pass the U.S. Marines motorcycle safety test. Like, she was like,
whoa.
A kick-ass. This whole week was like a week of kick-ass women for us.
Yeah, all, apparently.
Yeah, and the three of us were just these angry, emotional guys. They're like, we're not gonna take it.
Saved by all the ladies in your life. I like that.
Yeah.
What happened to Pastor Kim though? What was his like adult cult?
I don't think there was internet at the time, so I don't remember seeing that. I just remember my friend sending me a news clipping from Los Angeles like years later about him getting in trouble and he had to go back to Korea or something like that.
Oh dang.
Yeah.
Kicking people out of a country is real.
Well, Korea's got like the most Christian cults per capita of any other industrialized nation.
Really?
Yeah, there's so many Christians in Korea, but there's so many Korean cults because of that.
Wow. Whoa, that's so interesting.
Wow, I had no idea. Yeah. I want to know more about those.
Yeah, I'm sure someone out there has done a paper.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
That was really, really good. There were so many good stories in there. I'm kind of overwhelmed by the amount of like just excellent storytelling that just happened.
Well, you know what the crazy part is? I've always wanted to write this, but whenever I write it, it's like, yeah, but it's not dangerous. Like none of it was ever dangerous or anything. It was just me getting mad. That's the whole story.
It was just scary and not super dangerous, but also like upsetting. So I understand.
Yeah,
you could do it into like an emotional suspense thriller kind of thing.
Yeah, I think if you've never grown up around religion the way I have, it's like it might strike you as scary. The sense of having no power in a situation, that was frustrating.
Right.
And then when they said we can't leave, that was really frustrating. But at no point were any of us scared. We were like just full of rage. That was it. What they were doing to the Bible, what they were doing to these kids that were our age.
I guess that could be an interesting beginning to a narrative, though, where like then you see those people pop up again or other churches start doing like one of those behaviors. Like, you know, there could be some kind of like sort of slow spread of this bad ideology or maybe a ghost.
Oh, the guy who drove the van, the one that picked us up, he moved to Vancouver and I ran into him a bunch of times.
Oh, my God.
No.
It was like, I always made sustained eye contact with him whenever I walked by him. Like, just
like I know
him,
who you are, motherfucker.
Do you remember me, fucker?
It's the opposite of gorillas. You eat sticks around him to be like, hey, I can do whatever I want.
Just chew on some rocks. It's fine.
I remember him because I looked at I remember I was with the other pastor, John. I'm like, hey, there's bad haircut guy. He goes, oh my God, he's still got the crazy look in his eye.
Yikes.
Oh my gosh.
But he ended up being I heard through the grapevine, like an okay youth leader. Mm-hmm. Like he'd calmed down. Like I guess all of them sort of figured out, okay, this is too much. Like on their own.
That's the ideal situation for a cult where everyone's like, you know what, this is kind of nuts. We should probably stop.
Yeah. No need
Which
to
has happened
shoes.
A couple of times historically.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul, do you have any stories, books, movies, other podcasts that you have been super creeped out by that you think are just like really great, well-constructed stories that people who like this kind of thing would also really like? Besides the Black Tapes, of course.
I've always been a big fan of No Sleep. Mm-hmm. Like all those stories, like they've just been, whenever I need just a quick hour like of a scary story,
sure,
I'll just go through them, and just it's like a cool little lottery thing, like you never know what you're gonna get.
That's,
I like
true.
That feeling. Probably the one that creeped me out the most in the last year is Alice from Joseph Fink.
Yeah, Alice is dead. Yeah,
yeah, that's
a really good one.
The atmosphere, that one, and the story, yeah, it's great, but the atmosphere, the way he produced it and the way he wrote it, and just hearing her voice, something about her focus and the way things come from the periphery into that focus.
Mm-hmm.
I like very narrow storytelling when it comes to scary stories. Like the narrower the focus, the scarier the potential. Right.
Cause then, right. Mm-hmm. It's like a pair of headlights slicing through complete darkness. You know, the rest of it could be anything. And that sense of like vulnerability is so intense.
Yeah. Like, it's like listening to Babadook. Babadook? Is that Babadook?
The Babadook?
Babadook.
Yeah. Babadook.
I gotcha. One,
you got that claustrophobic sense because it's all from her point of view.
Yeah.
And anything outside of that point of view, like, is possible. Like, anything is possible. So Alice really gave me that sense, mm-hmm, listening to it. And I was really impressed by the way, he was able to pull that off. So that one is probably like right up there for me, in terms of like the things that creep me out. A lot of things don't usually creep me out. I try to get creeped out. Like I'll save scary podcasts for my walks in the woods with the dogs.
Mm-hmm. I think we just need a minute where you tell us about your dogs, because they're all wonderful.
Oh, aren't they great? It's all my wife's doing. Like I didn't want dogs at all, and then she adopted the first one 9 years ago, and the second one when I was doing a comedy show at Whistler.
Uh-oh.
She went to visit the SPCA and found the second guy. And then 2 years ago, there was a call out from the Humane Society of New Westminster to adopt this pit bull no one wanted, because she had like huge, aww, medical bills that you have to pay before taking her. And my wife's like, you know, we've been blessed in many ways. I'm like, I don't want a third dog. And then we went to see her, and I'm like, oh God, it's hard to say no to this. So she ended up at our house. And ended up, I don't have any regrets. I love them all when they get here, but I really don't want them before they get here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm kicking and screaming, and then they get here, and then, because I know I'm the one who ends up walking all of them.
Sure.
And the third one ended up, she loved finding feces and rolling in it, like for the first month.
Aww.
Like that was her thing.
You know, it's a habit that only a parent could love.
You know, now that I think about it, all the time in the woods of me screaming at her, no, I'm probably the freaked out so many people on the hiking trails when they hear this guy screaming.
There's probably an urban legend about some weird yeti like creature that screams no through the mountains where you hike, and you just don't know about it yet.
Probably. Like feces.
If anyone would like to see wonderful, wonderful videos and pictures of Paul's dogs, you can follow him at Mr. Paul Bay on Instagram, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that just reminded me of the scariest thing that ever happened
to
me, not involving an animal.
Oh gosh, okay.
So one time, so I watched Blair Witch Project.
Of course, it's wonderful.
That made me not camp by myself for a whole year. That ruined my, I remember thinking, I wish I didn't see that, because I was an atheist now, but that was disturbing enough to make me not want to be myself in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
After my roommate at the time, she's like, you know, you really should just force yourself back out there. What are you gonna do? Never fish again? Never camp again? I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's weird that the option of camping with other people never came up in this conversation.
But I mean, like, to be fair though, Paul, there's other people in the Blair Witch Project, and they fall off one by one.
That's true. That did nothing, right?
It did nothing.
So I went and I found a place on a map by this place called Logan Lake, and it was like you had to take a two-way radio, and you had to have good four-wheel drive to get in and drive for 2 hours into this very remote location. And so I thought, well, I could do it. So I went, found it, and at the daytime, it was gorgeous. The fishing was so easy because the fish hadn't been used to people. I don't want to say the name of the lake because I might go back there one day.
Okay.
And I don't want to ruin it with tourists. But I was just on the shore. Every cast, I caught a fish and, you know, released it back. It was beautiful. That's how remote it was. But at night, the wind picked up, and there was a full moon. So you could see every branch silhouette on my tent. And this is my first time out after watching Blair Witch a year prior. And the coyotes started in with their howling.
Oh, boy.
So I was kind of freaked out. And then I had to pee. And I think it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I've been awake. I hadn't slept a wink. And I was so scared because, you know, my imagination, it was like I kept seeing long-haired women outside my tent in the silhouette.
Uh-huh. Oh man.
And I'm like, oh fuck me. Cause in that area, it's, we have a lot of what's called this moss called grandpa's beard. It's okay. Long and mossy. It just sort of hangs.
It's a great name.
Yeah. And it's dry. It had this weird effect outside. Anyways, really scary. So I finally decided, well, I need to get out there and pee. So if something kills me while I'm peeing, undignified, but at least I tried to pee. So
at least you tried. That's all that matters. Your ghost can tell people that when it's haunting the area.
It sounded very heroic in my head before I put it into words. So I step outside, and as I stepped outside, I took this little trail. I don't know why I took a trail, because no one out there. I kicked over a little pile of stones. Someone had built a little pile of stones.
Oh, no.
No.
Like, it wasn't right by my tent, but I guess I hadn't looked in that area. And so in my mind, someone built it right then.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, right. Because you hadn't noticed it before.
So I remember I stayed outside my tent the whole night with my hatchet, just watching things. Right? Just watching. And the next morning, it occurred to me, okay, I found other piles of stones. I'm like, okay, someone camped here and made these things. Probably after watching Blair Witch, and had been here for a year.
Probably. Oh my god.
So that's the scariest thing, now that I just remember that.
This, you're just confirming to me why I don't go, like, camping in the woods by myself, but I appreciate that.
Well, I have dogs now, so it's not scary at all. Like, there no matter go. What happens.
Right? Yeah.
Dogs will protect you at least.
All right, so adopt dogs from your local humane society, mm-hmm. always carry a hatchet, always scare your siblings, and destroy all crawl spaces. I think these are very good take-home lessons.
Very
I think
good so. Lessons.
All right, Paul, would you like to plug your projects / tell people where they can find you on the internet, please?
Yeah, I'm at, just go to the website, thebigloop.com for my solo anthology series. Then I have the blacktapespodcast.com for the thing I do with Terry. We are building the rest of season 3 right now. Mm-hmm. For the Black Tapes. It should come back end of this year or early next year. If everything, I want to knock on wood somewhere because I can't have anything go bad with that. The Big Loop, I'm done, almost done writing season 2, and I've cast parts of season 2, so we should be up with that pretty soon.
Awesome.
I'm also building a separate, sort of like a memoir based podcast, mm-hmm. just for my Patreon followers.
Oh, cool.
So it's like Memory Palace, but with instead of memories of other people, it's all my memories. So stories that I've been telling, like, today, mm-hmm. That kind of stuff set to music and, you know, just a podcast of funny stories from my life.
So a good sampling for people to check that out then.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm trying to build right now. We'll see if it works out. Mm-hmm. And I got some other stuff going on, but I'm not allowed to talk about it right now. But
Fair enough.
You guys will find out.
All right, we will link it up.
Mr. Paul Bay on Twitter, so people can keep an eye out there to make sure they stay apprised.
Yep. Awesome.
Paul, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Thanks for creeping us out as much as possible.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad we did this.
Me too.
Us too. And remember, listeners,
stay creepy.
Stay cool. Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin MacLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us at Spirits Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. We also have all of our episode transcripts, guest appearances, and merch on our website, as well as a form to send us your urban legends at spiritspodcast.com.
Join our member community on Patreon, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Just $1 gets you access to audio extras with so much more available too. Recipe cards, director's commentaries, exclusive merch, and real physical gifts.
We are a founding member of Multitude, a collective of independent audio professionals. If you like Spirits, you will love the other shows that live on our website at multitude.productions.
And above all else, if you liked what you heard today, please share us with your friends. That is the very best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.